Morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. Before I begin, just mention a few caveats. Number one, I'm not a representative of the OU, and anything that I say should not reflect in any way on the OU. Also, on the other hand, I am not a member of PETA or any animal liberation movement or anything like that. And I do not claim to be an expert on every topic that I'm addressing. And also, the final caveat is that we're going to be covering a broad sweep of issues that are worthy of much deeper exploration. And we don't really have time for that today, so just going to be mentioning some of the salient points. Just to give an overview of what we're going to be covering today. So first of all, I think it's important for us to take a look at Western non-Jewish thought in terms of issues relating to animal ethics, just so that we can see what the human mind contrives without the benefit of the Torah. And then we'll take a brief look at the issues of Tzar Bale Chaim in Halacha, just a very, very brief glimpse. And then we'll speak about one or two contemporary issues that Tzar Bale Chaim crops up in, and perhaps one of them may be related to Kashrus. Depending on time, we'll see how deeply we'll get into it and how much we'll cover. But one thing that may happen is that we may come away with more questions than answers. Before I begin, being back with some of my feathered friends over here reminds me of my first day as a veterinarian. First day in the office, lady walks in with a box, and you know, as a vet, you never know what's going to come in next. Lady walks in with a box, and I hear these scratching noises coming from the box. And I'm wondering, what is this going to be? I'm nervous, new guy, rookie. And the lady puts the box on the table, opens it up, and this chicken pops its head out. Very appropriate sound effects. And the lady, her name was Mrs. Drake, kept ducks and chickens as pets. And I asked her, you know, what was wrong with the chicken, and she said that the chicken was constipated. And then I really started getting nervous. I didn't know what to do with a constipated chicken. And I said to her, Mrs. Drake, you have to forgive me. Today's my first day on the job. And in veterinary school, birds were really considered a specialty. And when we learned about poultry, it was really just in terms of hen houses and the management of hen houses and large-scale treatment of outbreaks of diseases. So my only real experience with chickens is eating them. So fortunately, she had a sense of humor. But this is kind of my lead-in to Western view of animals, and we have a very broad spectrum. Just in terms of the early Christian world, they reinterpreted, you know, the Torah in a number of ways, and one of the ways that they understood things was that any mention of animals, Paul particularly mentions Leman Yanuach Shocha, in order that your animals should rest on the Shabbos. He doesn't see any benefit for animals in that, but rather that it's all for human benefit. And without going into all the details, the development of Western thought, all the way up until Descartes, generally views animals as, Descartes himself viewed animals as merely a machine, which humans can do anything that they want with. And then as we move into the 17th, 18th century, people started moving towards the other direction. And we have an individual called Jeremy Bentham, and he was a British legislator, and he introduced the first laws in Western civilization that protected animals. In fact, he brought a donkey into the British court, a donkey that had been beaten by an individual, reminiscent of the Shor HaNisgal, an ox that killed someone and had to be brought to court. And he brought this animal to court to demonstrate the cruelty to animals, and the individual who committed the act was punished. Then we move on to Schopenhauer, who was a famous German philosopher, and he unfortunately felt that the fact that human beings don't give animals rights is a blight on humanity, and he blamed it all on the Jews. He said this is the fault of the Jews, that animals are not treated with respect, and unfortunately he was the forerunner of the Nazis. And fascinatingly enough, one of the first pieces of legislation that the Nazis, Yimach Shmam, introduced in 1934 was what they called the Tierschutzgesetz, which is the animal welfare, animal protection law. And one of the more ironic laws, in 1938, they introduced a law mandating that animals that are being transported by train have to be treated in a certain way with respect. They also wanted to ban animal experimentation, but one of the professors complained to Goebbels, and they changed their minds and they allowed animal experimentation. But as we know, unfortunately, they experimented on human beings, and it was decided scientifically that many of those experiments were not valid because the humans were under such poor conditions that they had to redo the experiments on animals to verify the results. And unfortunately, things moved more in that direction, where we have certain extremists today. In the 1970s, developed a movement called the Animal Liberation Movement, Animal Rights Movement, and unfortunately we've seen incidents of human beings being attacked, car bombs, etc., of people who perform animal experiments. Okay, that being said, again, just to mention, the human mind, without the benefit of the Torah, sees on the one hand animals as being merely machines for our use and abuse, and on the other hand, we have people who see animals who have equal rights as human beings. And in fact, if you discriminate against an animal, I learned a new term recently, it's called speciesism, such as racism. So that's the opposite extreme. Of course, the Torah HaKadosha helps us to develop a sense of reality, a sense of context. And as we know, we read not too long ago, Torah opens with Hashem giving Adam HaRishon a mandate that he bequeaths to man all of the animals in the world. Man is to rule over them, and they are there ultimately for man's use. On the other hand, we have many, many mitzvahs in the Torah, spread throughout the Torah, which apparently deal with man's requirement to limit animal suffering. For example, lo sachsom shor b'dishor, you're not allowed to muzzle an ox while it is eating, and you're not allowed to use animals of two different species to plow together because they have different strengths. And beyond that, beyond the aspect of legislation, there is also the aspect of morality. We know the Gemara tells us in a number of places that we have to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, imitatio Dei. We're supposed to be Hashem's representatives in the world, and we mahu rachum, afataru rachum, just as Hashem is merciful, we have to be merciful, and v'racham avakol ma'asav, just as Hashem has mercy on all of His creatures, so too human beings have to strive for that level as well. And in fact, the famous story in the Gemara about Rebbe, a calf that was being taken out to slaughter, ran to Rebbe and hid under his cloak, and he sent the animal away. He said, go to the slaughterhouse, for that reason you were created. And as a result of his lack of sensitivity, Rebbe was afflicted with a terrible intestinal ailment. And it wasn't until he demonstrated mercy and kindness to animals in a different situation was he relieved of that pain. The Talmud also deals with whether Tzar Balei Chaim is a mitzvah d'oraisa or mitzvah d'rabbanan. And the conclusion of most of the Rishonim is that Tzar Balei Chaim d'oraisa. And we have the the famous sugyas that deal with this issue in Bava Metzia, Daf Lamed Beis, we have the mitzvah of prika uta'ina, that if a person sees someone struggling to load his donkey, you have to help him load the donkey, and if you see someone's donkey is overburdened and struggling, you have to help and remove the load. So we have a whole discussion there in the Gemara, and the Gemara keeps on raising the issue that Tzar Bale Chaim is the Oraisa. Although there's no clear explicit source in the Torah as to a particular mitzvah that is the mitzvah of the prohibition of Tzar Bale Chaim. And the different Rishonim have different approaches. Rashi explains in Masechet Shabbos, Rashi says that the Dorshe Tameh HaKrah, that we learn out from the fact that the Torah gives us the mitzvah of Priko, of unloading the animal, we learn out that there is an issue of Tzar Bale Chaim. The Meiri, for example, says from the fact that we have a mitzvah of Lo Tachsom, you're not allowed to muzzle an animal, prevent it from eating while it is working with food, that is the source for the prohibition against Tzar Bale Chaim. Whatever the source is, it seems to be agreed upon again by most of the Rishonim, and it's brought down in Halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. And we have certain situations where there is a conflict between human need and the suffering of the animal. And in fact, the very source of the prohibition of Tzar Bale Chaim comes together with loading an animal. And certainly if there's a mitzvah to load an animal, and that loading of the animal causes some hardship to the animal, but that loading is a human need. So obviously we are allowed to inflict some suffering on animals for human needs. And there's a tremendously rich literature about this in terms of the Rishonim, in terms of the Shalos of Tshuvos, just to try and map out some of the issues that may be involved, some of the human needs that some of the poskim deal with, and how they relate to the conflict of Tzar Bale Chaim. So first of all, the most obvious human need is nutrition, is food. And of course, animals were given over to us. We know that Noah was given permission to kill animals for food. And there's a whole question whether killing an animal in of itself is Tzar Bale Chaim or not. Not a topic for now. But assuming that there is some sort of tzahar, even with shkita, and we know that shkita is the least, again, this is a whole nother lecture. Shkita causes the least amount of Tzar Bale Chaim in the context of other methods of slaughter. We're allowed to kill animals and eat them. Okay, the question might arise in terms of food for delicacies. If there's a type of food that perhaps we don't really need, and Rabbi Loki mentioned earlier foie gras, it's an interesting topic. I know some of the poskim in Eretz Yisrael say that there's no problem, and apparently even in Hungary, the Chasam Sofer and others used to eat foie gras, but the description of the production of this type of food and whether it's necessary or not may open it up to the question. Also in terms of veal, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a well-known tshuva about veal, and again, without going into the details of how these animals are kept, there may be a real question over there. Another human need or benefit is medical, and then from there we can go into immediate medical needs versus more long-term medical needs, animal experimentation. Trying out analgesics, painkillers, causing the animal tremendous amounts of pain, and then seeing how these medications work and their safety, etc. So again, there's a tremendous literature on this. We don't have time to go into it. I'm just merely raising the issues. Financial issues. Okay, do we say that you're allowed to cause Tzar Bale Chaim only for subsistence? In other words, if you need it for your parnasa, then you can cause Tzar Bale Chaim. Or perhaps for preventing some kind of economic loss, and we'll discuss this a little bit later. Or are you allowed to cause Tzar Bale Chaim even to make obscene profits? So again, that's another topic which is dealt with among the poskim. Another issue is psychological or cultural. that we know the Gemara tells us that in ancient times, for a Jewish king, which was also the practice for non-Jewish kings, when the king died, they would burn some of his property, and they would also injure his horses so that no one else would be able to use his horse, and they would cut the horse's tendon so the horse would now become lame. Doesn't sound very nice, but yet the Gemara seems to say that it is permissible because of the kavod of the melech, and we know that the melech is the only category of individual whose kvodo is eino machul. If the king wishes to renounce the honor that is due to him, he's not allowed to do so, because his honor is the national honor. So therefore, perhaps for an honor which is a national honor, one would be allowed to inflict tzar bale chayim. Again, this is something which is very foreign to our sensibilities. Also, perhaps an issue of kavod for someone who is a zaken, someone who it's not lefi chodo, it's not in accordance with his stature and status to go out and help an animal that's in distress. Okay, and then the final category that I'm just going to mention now, although there are more, but is entertainment. Are human beings allowed to inflict suffering on animals for entertainment purposes? A classical example of this would be in Spain, bullfighting. And Rav Ovadia Yosef has a very... we know Rav Ovadia doesn't mince his words, and he has a very sharp tshuva about that. But on the other hand, zoos, animals are taken out of their natural habitat, and perhaps there is certainly an element of tzar bale chayim over there. But Rav Ovadia Yosef says that since visiting the zoo, and some poskim say you say a bracha when you see unusual animals, since visiting the zoo may inspire one to avodas Hashem, to greater appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this would be permissible. And all of these questions also on the other side of the scale, how much suffering is caused to the animal? If it's a tremendous amount of suffering that is caused, if it's a great amount of suffering, we have to weigh out, is this a long-term suffering, or if this is a short-term suffering? These all weighing to taken into account, and also whether it's a mild suffering, perhaps we're more lenient with that. And just to deal with, I think we only have time for one contemporary issue, and this relates to the question of whether a Jew, in terms of tzar bale chayim, only has to deal with such a situation to hold himself back from inflicting pain, whether a Jew has to actively go out and alleviate the pain of any animal that he knows about, or whether a Jew has to be an activist, so to speak, and get other people to be aware of that. This again is a question which is dealt with in the poskim, but the topic that I'd like to address now is something which that final issue will be dependent on that. And the topic that I would like to talk about just very briefly, something which affects all of us, anyone who's had breakfast at one time or another, and eats eggs, probably thinks or doesn't think that eggs have an existence prior to the carton on the supermarket shelf. So just to discuss a little bit about the egg industry, just in terms of the legal aspects, the American law, so birds are not considered livestock by U.S. law, and therefore are not protected by any legislation, for example, the Humane Slaughter Act. There are guidelines, but they're not really enforceable. Okay, so a hen that's going to be an egg layer starts out its life, of course, as an egg. The old question, what came first, the chicken or the egg? So started out as an egg, and the eggs are hatched in hatcheries with thousands and thousands of other eggs. These chicks hatch, and pretty soon after they have hatched, they have individuals who are specialized to determine which are males and which are females. And of course, as you can imagine, birds which are males are not so vital to the egg producing industry. So what do they do with the male checks. So unfortunately, in most commercial egg plants, the males are disposed of either by gassing or by crushing or by just being buried alive, bulldozed into pits. So obviously the real issues of Tzar Balei Chaim over there. Then in terms of how the animals are housed, so the cages that we see over here are five-star accommodations compared with how hens are kept in hen houses, in commercial hen houses. In terms of the average space that's allowed per bird, 67 square inches. And just to give you an idea, a bird, in order to flap its wings, needs approximately 303 square inches. So these birds do not have enough room to stand up or to turn around, never mind to flap their wings. Also, all of the natural behaviors which birds do, for example, perching and dust bathing. They like flapping their wings and bathing themselves in dust, which gets rid of mites. So, of course, these birds cannot do. There's not even enough room for them to preen themselves. Also, they're packed, usually three or four hens in a cage. The cages are entirely of metal wire. So the birds also develop foot problems because the cages are at an angle, so that as soon as the bird lays an egg, the eggs roll down onto a conveyor belt. Also, the birds are fed by conveyor belt. There's a conveyor belt that goes past their beaks. And of course, as you can imagine, there's tremendous stress. This stress leads to the birds pecking at each other. This pecking at each other causes tremendous damage, bleeding, and causes the birds to be distracted from their job, which is laying eggs. So what they do in these hen houses is they de-beak the birds. When they're young chicks, they have special machines which cut off the tips of the beaks, and birds do have pain receptors in the tips of their beaks, so they do suffer somewhat because of that. So other medical issues which arise from this, because they're laying so many eggs, the average in a good hen house, at least when I was in vet school, maybe even more now, a good hen produced within a year approximately 300 eggs. So almost an egg every day. So this caused tremendous osteoporosis. Many of the birds are depleted in calcium because calcium is needed for the shells. And so there are many broken bones when the birds are handled. Also, they have uterine prolapses from laying so many eggs, which is very unnatural for them. And then also fatty liver hemorrhagic syndrome, another medical issue. Something else to maximize the egg production, they have what's called false molting. When in nature, when birds lay eggs, they lay eggs for a certain season, and then when the season changes, they stop laying eggs and their bodies replenish, and then they start laying the eggs again. So what they do in hen houses is they starve the birds for at least 5 days. They don't give them any food. That simulates the change of season, and then the birds start molting, losing their feathers, and then soon after that, they, in their physiological state, they imagine that they are now in the new season, and they start laying eggs again, just for a short time, because at that point, soon after that, there are what we call spent hens. They have no more left to give, really. So certainly starving these animals is a tremendous issue of Tzar Balei Chaim. And then when the egg production slows enough and their economic viability has ended, so the spent hens in some areas are sold for slaughter for low-grade meat, but in other areas they meet the same fate as the male chicks and are just en masse, either buried alive, bulldozed, or gassed. So the EU is planning to phase out large animal batteries by 2012, but in the United States there is no legislation pending, no plans to change it. So you have a very bleak picture over here in terms of issues of Tzar Balei Chaim with egg laying, but we have to ask ourselves what the alternatives are. There are people who are into organic eggs, and that is certainly these days a viable option. But something for an entire population of a country is perhaps not so viable. And here we have to take into account some of the issues that I mentioned earlier in terms of halacha, in terms of human need. First of all, it's indeterminable, I think, whether the country would be able to sustain in terms of the area, in terms of the economic requirements, whether the country would be able to sustain large-scale production of eggs. And even if the country would be able to do so, would people even buy eggs? If you had to pay at least a dollar an egg, probably more, would you continue eating eggs? You know, which in itself might regulate the whole industry, and perhaps things would get back to a manageable situation. But again, the human need, the nutritional need for eating eggs, if you want to view it as such, perhaps justifies, or in some way could justify, the tremendous Tzar Balei Chaim that is questionable. And I suggest to everyone to speak to their posek about such an issue, and also whether this knowledge obligates us to not eat eggs, or to seek out organic eggs, which may bring with them their own halachic questions. There'll be more chances of fertilized eggs, and then we'll have to be more aware of blood spots, etc., which may not be such a bad thing to revive halachas, which many people have kind of forgotten about. But just wanted to raise the issues and let people think about them. Again, I don't think we have time to go into foie gras and poultry slaughter, but while I have a captive audience, just want to point out, in terms of kaporos, for those who do use chickens, hens for kaporos, unfortunately, most people don't know how to hold the bird while they're doing kaporos. Many people think that you take it by the leg or by the wing and give it a swing, and that's it. This causes tremendous Tzar Balei Chaim, and you know, we don't want to add one more thing to have kapara for as we're doing kaporos. So the best, most humane way to hold the chicken would be to hold the animal from the top, to put your hand over the top and under the top of the wings, and to support it underneath as well, and then to move it around your head. So again, the animal should be held from the top, over the top, with your hands under the wings, and supported underneath if possible, and that way we'll make sure that our Yom Kippur will be meaningful in every way possible, and the animals will not suffer, and we will not be guilty of Tzar Balei Chaim in trying to achieve our own kapara. I wish everyone a wonderful day, and enjoy your turkey, and thanks for listening.